episode 31, Stone Creek Coffee Podcast, talking today about sustainability. Surprise! Because I didn't tell you in the last episode that that's what we're going to talk about today. But it is coming out of an email that we got from a listener, Pete Hipke, or whatever your last name is, Pete, thanks for the email. He gave us several questions. We're going to tackle one today. I thought it was good we talk about sooner rather than later because it's really a popular issue today or in today's sort of social context, and that would be sustainability. What does it mean? What does it actually look like in coffee, both at origin and at a coffee roasting company? And what we want to try and do today is talk in realistic terms and not talk in platitudes, because it'd be really easy for us to say, well, we like to be sustainable because of X, Y, and Z, but what we should do is talk about how sustainability is actually accomplished and how it's actually a good thing and not what it could ideally be maybe one day in the future.
So we're being realists, we're not being idealists.
Ideally, we'd be realists. Before we do that, per usual, we're going to drink something. So Christian had the task of bringing today's drink.
Yeah. We're going to drink something a little fun and something I was exposed to in Colombia. And it's something called aguardiente. I've had it in Guatemala. I've had it in Colombia. This is a regional liquor. And every single region is a little bit different. And we're going to be tasting the aguardiente from Antioquia, Colombia. I've had the one from Huila a number of times called Doble Anís. And I'm interested to see what Drew thinks of this.
Yeah, he brought it last week when Eric brought beer, and I held off tasting it because I wanted to taste it for you guys. Can you get this in the States? Or
I actually got this at discount.
Oh, really?
We have a really nice liquor store that has tons of really exotic beers, exotic liqueurs and stuff like that, and found it in Milwaukee.
Sweet. It smells like licorice a little bit. I'm having a hard time getting any other note. But
it's anise.
What?
It's anise all the way. And normally you're supposed to
cheers.
Just cheers and shoot it.
Sorry. Oh.
It's all good.
I don't normally shoot.
That's
all right.
Part of this.
So I'm gonna shoot this.
Alright.
Alright.
Cheers.
So it's 29% alcohol. So it's actually not brutal. It goes down really easy.
No, this is a lot easier than other ones that I've had. What you're traditionally supposed to do when you're chilling at a Colombian bar and you order aguardiente, you actually order like a short bottle of 375, and you get these little shot glasses with it. And whoever buys it starts the round, and any time the person who bought it wants to get all the drink, pass out shots, drink, pass out shots, drink. And it can be brutal after the fourth or fifth bottle.
I bet. It's not really my MO to just drink to get smashed.
Yeah.
It's not bad, though. Like, I would consider sipping this, especially with ice. Like, with ice, this would be really nice.
This is just sugarcane brandy flavored with a little bit of anise. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's vaguely reminiscent of absinthe, but not nearly. So, like, I do not like absinthe. I'm not normally a licorice guy, but this is subtle enough where you can enjoy it, and I'm sure it'd make some pretty solid cocktails. So, if you got some good, what would you pair up with that in a cocktail?
I might use that as like a bittering note in like a Manhattan or some kind of other whiskey based cocktail. Two parts whiskey, one part that, throw in a little bit of vermouth, and got yourself a nice cocktail.
A really strong cocktail.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm ready to be sustainable.
I am. Okay. Yes.
Cool.
I studied philosophy.
Oh, yeah. Drew, this is a good move.
Drew,
I like
Drew
this.
Studied.
I studied counseling at a seminary.
Yes. So he has a lot of, like, a little bit of theology background.
I had systematic theology classes. I took Greek. Yeah.
So it's important for us to define our words, to have definitions on what things are before we discuss them. I think sustainability is something that really needs to be defined, because a lot of people have a lot of different feelings or emotions on like what sustainability is and how you're a sustainable company. But I find it's really hard to talk about it unless you really define what sustainability is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I was kind of thinking about definition. I think the same definition could work for a coffee roasting company and a coffee growing operation. It's just that the mechanic to do so sometimes looks a little bit different and feels different because we're in front of a roasting company that's making money in the States, and so they must be doing really well and they should invest in everything. And then we have this ideology of the struggling producer who needs to be all these certifications in order to make a living to grow. And part of that, a little of that is true because we're a company and we're making money, and the producer sometimes has different struggles than we do. They're all business struggles. I'll point that out. They're running a business. We're running a business.
Right.
And I think sustainability, simply put, is making enough money from your product that you sell in order to invest in the future.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people bring to sustainability, well, and you could apply it to many different things. I would just sum it up in two words, in that it is, if something is sustainable, it is perpetually repeatable. Say you sell wood, whatever you call that, you're a forester, a logger, you're planting trees and you're only harvesting them at the rate that you're growing them, so that it's technically perpetually repeatable. And coffee's not really that way in terms of the plant system, because they grow a lot quicker and whatnot, and the harvest is the fruit, not the actual plant itself. As growers grow coffee and as we buy coffee, we're doing it in a way that we can do it like that every year for eternity, assuming everything was equal, without somebody dying as a result of the process or the land dying or whatnot. Let's talk about sustainability as a term in the industry right now, as a buzzword, because we have our understanding of what it is as we come into this, but as I mentioned, a lot of people have the idea that it's mainly sort of a social agenda at origin, not so much of a all-encompassing term in regard to a business or a way of being.
A lot of times when you hear sustainability mentioned, it kind of gives you this fuzzy feeling, oh, you're doing something nice for someone over there. And the question that I often get asked from customers when I'm doing events focused on sustainability, it's like, well, what are you doing to make their lives better? And there's an implication of like, oh, you're actively doing something to make their lives sustainable. Like, that's the emotion that's behind it. That's kind of the buzz. Like, how are you changing people's lives at origin?
To summarize, the term gets thrown around a lot, and you see it most often come up in regard to how agricultural practices are managed at origin to grow good coffee, and then how employment practices are managed at origin to sustain, pickers and their families and whatnot. Because picking, and there was a video about this at Symposium last year, or this last April, that really highlighted the fact that a lot of people in developing countries where their parents picked coffee for their livelihood or grew coffee for generations, now they don't want to do it anymore because they have access to more education. They can get a quote-unquote better job or a job with better face working in an office. So they don't want to pick coffee. And so there's the worry then that, the coffee as it exists, hand-picked, isn't sustainable because there's not enough financial incentive at origin to do that, to have people want to pick coffee for a living.
It is a serious issue, and we do see a lot of younger generation people going into the city. Colombia is a classic example. You have a high-class city in Bogota. You can go get a 4-year degree, and then you can go get a desk job and make twice or three times what your parents made by selling your coffee at a base price. However, I think in better transactions between producers and roasters, younger generations are actually starting to see, like, hey, we could actually make some money doing this, and we don't have to, like, we can invest in the land, and we don't have to have the kind of life that we had growing up. Like, there's an opportunity for us to make a living at this. And we see lots of younger producers actually jumping at it. like Costa Rica, I think we hung with 5 or 6 within one trip. They were younger than we were, and they're like, yeah, I'm going to go invest in the land, and my dad really wants to teach me all these things, and I think we can actually make a difference in the coffee world. It's like, that's a kind of attitude that really needs to be cultivated.
Yeah, I think at Origin specifically, what is more, or what is at risk of being unsustainable is commodity coffee. Like picking, and a lot of families still do this, is they pick their coffee, they sell it to a co-op or whatever that processes it, and then sells it to the commodity market, really. So they get practically nothing. Like, you're lucky to break even at that point. And so that's not terribly sustainable. And there's not much upside when the commodity market is as low as it is right now, which is like historic lows for the commodity market.
Yeah.
Whereas that sustainability grows a lot more, and there's a lot more opportunity for innovation and entrepreneurship in the specialty coffee market. There are families in pretty much every country we source from that have done a really good job of, or really good job with their land, really good job with their marketing, really good job with their networking. And so they do really well for themselves, like really well by United States of America standards. Like, there are celebrity coffee producers that own a lot of land, that they manage a lot of farms, they sell a lot of coffee for ridiculous prices. Look at the auction numbers from Hacienda La Esmeralda in Panama.
Or Best of Panama.
They do their, like, Hacienda La Esmeralda does their own auction, like, right, for their lots. It's ridiculous, and really nice people, so good for them. But with innovation, dedication, there are a lot of opportunities to build a brand as a coffee producer because the demand is there. The flip side of that, though, is the question, is that sustainable? Because I said the market is there. The market hasn't always been there. And I wonder, and I'm not sure, like, we'll see. My guess would be is that this uber high-end market for specialty coffee may not always be as big as it is right now. So another thing you'll see is in Panama, at times, people are stopping the planting of other varieties of coffee in favor of geisha because it's so hot right now. And everybody wants to buy that in Europe and the United States and in Japan and even China. Like, companies, coffee roasters are paying $100 per green pound for geisha. So the producers are saying, we're just planting geisha, and I totally get that. But if there is some parasite or some disease that sweeps through that is really feeding off geisha, like, they can lose it all, like, just like that, if they put all of their eggs in one basket. So the sustainability thing really goes kind of both ways, on the low end and the high end. So I think it's a lot about balance.
So when we're thinking about terms like fair trade, organic, Raid Forest Alliance, this is, you know, terms that you typically throw around when you're talking about sustainability. It really comes to play when the market is in a low position. I think that's kind of why we become attached to those terms, because we've come through an era from, say, like the middle 90s to into the 2000s, we pretty much had lower market conditions. So lower market conditions meaning producers are making below cost of production. And cost of production varies from country to country. That's a very complicated thing to get into. But what all these types of certifications do is it adds a premium to the minimum price of coffee. So say the minimum price of coffee is $1.20, which is not a whole lot of money. Lots of places it costs $2.70 to make that pound of coffee start to finish. By being fair trade, you actually get a premium on top of that guaranteed, so it's like a 35 cent premium. Fair trade organic is like another 30 cents on top of that. I think it's 65 cents. So if you produce fair trade organic certified coffee, you get a minimum price regardless of what the market condition is at. And in a low position, that really comes into favor. Roasters get things that are consistent. They have fair trade organic coffee that they can kind of market as like, hey, this is us doing well. We're buying product where producers are making more. And it's good when the market is low because producers are guaranteed that amount. When it starts to change a little bit is when the market rises. And market conditions can change from a lot of things, primarily speculation in the market.
Because yeah, it's driven by investors,
yeah,
not driven by actual supply, which is weird.
Yeah, the price of coffee would be very different. It was just suppliers and roasters, producers and roasters. And it also moves with all the rest of the commodities. So as you see oil shifting and like how your gas prices are week after week, it's really random. And it's due to people speculating on the market. So as the market comes up, the price for coffee can actually go above the minimum for fair trade. And what's interesting is sometimes you see people stopping to sell their coffee at fair trade because they can deliver it to Joe down the street, who's a commodity buyer, and actually get more money for their coffee. They don't have to put the effort into it because they just whatever. And I think that'll be an interesting challenge down the road, is if the market jumps up, will people still do good practice coffee? Will they still pick awesome cherries? Will they still process, or will they just dump it off at the mill? Because they'll get the same price or more than what their cost of production is.
And it's not a question of if the market goes up, it's when. Because, I mean, it's cyclical. These things happen. Like, if the market's at historic lows, it's not going to stay at historic lows. It's like when the stock market crashes. Like, that hurts. That's really painful. But at that time, you start hedging your bets long term, and you buy when it's low because you know eventually it's going to come up. You just don't hold on to your stocks forever. Sell when it's high. With coffee, we know that it's eventually going to come up. And I think that question, Christian, is pretty fair, is what then do producers do? Do they continue to put forth the work? Because coffee roasters, like Stone Creek Coffee, like, we have to be planning and thinking for the times when coffee costs $3 or $4 a pound on the market, because that happens sometimes. How do you manage that sort of volatility in the market? Because if our average cost per green pound just from the farm is $3 a pound and the market's at $4, and we buy 1 million pounds, you know, maybe in the future, 1 million pounds worth of coffee, that's $1 million added onto our cost line without any added revenue.
Yeah.
All that to say is sustainability at origin is not as simple as sort of a set of values in terms of how you treat people. Like, how you treat people should be quality, should be fair, and should be perpetually repeatable regardless of what the coffee costs. Like, we're conscientious of what it takes people to produce coffee, and, you know, we as a business have our own set of goals and agendas, but if you're buying or trying to buy coffee in a way that is to the detriment of other people, it eventually will catch up to you. And I will say that you really can't buy quality coffee that way.
No, you might get lucky once or twice. Yeah, it's not repeatable. There's no way you can get that same cup year after year if you get lucky.
Yeah, your partners aren't going to want to work with you. Or if you're, like, trying to drive people below the cost of production right now, they'll say, screw you, and then they'll go sell it to somebody else, because the specialty coffee market's pretty good for producers who want to take care of their coffee.
So just to backpedal just a micro bit, in this low market condition that we're in, we'll probably be in this low market condition for the next year or two. It could change next week with Brazil forecast. It could rocket up to $2 a pound. But I'll say, if you as a consumer want to be like feeling like you're buying something sustainable, and knowing that the dollars that you're spending on roasted coffee is going to the right sources, things like fair trade, organic, they can help. Fair trade and organic sometimes are good, sometimes they're actually not so good.
Yeah.
So if your coffee farm is full of leaf rust and you need to spray fungicide to get rid of all of it, you're not going to be organic anymore. So you're actually not helping a producer be sustainable by giving a demand for organic coffee. Things like Rainforest Alliance, Oots, bird-friendly coffees really just are reflective of the ecosystem that the farmer has created. And so a lot of those are kind of representative of the hard work that a producer puts into their farm, and they can be a symbol of sustainability, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee that just because you're buying Rainforest Alliance coffee doesn't mean that it's a sustainable coffee, and vice versa.
Yeah.
I think the best way to feel good about where your dollar is going is to research the roaster that you buy from. I think I've recommended this before. Understand their mission, understand how they buy coffee. Because if you believe in the roaster can make good decisions down the road and have sustainable relationships. That's good for the producer. Because it's not good for the roaster to have, as Drew mentioned, like relationships that are one-sided, because otherwise the producer, when the market goes up, they're going to say, screw you, I'm going to sell my coffee somewhere else. So you want to find a roaster that's really able to balance that out for you. Direct trade is one way to do that. Indirect trade is another way to do that. It really does vary by roaster to roaster, and there are a lot of good roasters out there. I'm not trying to speculate that there are bad roasters. In fact, Starbucks has a really strong program of sustainability out there, and they have a lot more money to be able to invest in those projects than we do. So, like, kudos for them for being able to do something like that.
Yeah, I think what you said about learning the roaster is most important, more important than the certifications, because you can actually learn about the farms. Like, a lot of coffee companies will tell you what farms they buy from, and you can follow a lot of the farms that we actually work with on Instagram. Like, there's a lot of information out there now in today's day of social media and the internet where you can learn exactly where the coffee comes from and read everything about how they do what they do without having to work through what we tell you. Because I will tell you that coffee companies can feed you a total load. Like, we could do that, and then you would just accept it. Not because you're naive, but because, like, coffee companies have a really bizarre aura of sustainability and social responsibility. I have mentioned before, I do all the interviews for employees at Stone Creek, their initial interview with a team of people, but I sit in on those, and a lot of people will tell me, hey, I wanted to come work at your company because you guys are socially responsible. I said, well, that's cool. Like, I'll actually ask people, so how are we socially responsible? And they don't know. Like, and a lot of companies will put on, like, these labels and say, you know, we buy fair trade, organic, or whatever. Or we buy Rainforest Alliance, or we're socially responsible. But companies in today's day and age can get away with just saying that without providing some sort of tangible representation of their sustainability or their responsibility. How are you giving back? How are you philanthropic? So they'll say that and they have no idea how. So I do like to tell people, like, it is a thing that Stone Creek Coffee is socially responsible, that we're not just, like, blowing money. You know, there's nobody at the company that just takes home buku bucks. Like, it goes back into the ecosystem in which we work. But so just be cautious, learn about the company, and get actual tangible representations of what they're claiming. Don't just buy into it. Let's summarize at origin.
Okay.
So at origin, what it would look like is that pickers are making enough money to feed their family. Like, it is a pretty basic job, even in origin countries, but they should have enough to live off of. Like, and a lot of times pickers will do picking for the season, and then they'll go back and do other things. Because you'll see pickers in Guatemala come from Panama or Nicaragua. Like, they'll literally get on a bus, go to Guatemala, pick coffee, go home. They'll take the whole family with them. You know, so it needs to be worth it for them. They need to be able to save up some money while they're picking, take it back home, and live off of that for a little while they do, you know, whatever they do in their home country. So that's one part. And then the person coordinating it has to have it all to facilitate the process, because it's expensive. Like, you got to build a mill and stuff, and, you know, you got to have the means to interact with the buyers in the States if you're trying to sell a specialty coffee. You know, that requires the ability to build a relationship and secure sort of multi-year contracts from roasters like us, so you know, hey, I'm going to have this, I have this market now, I'm going to have it 5 years from now. There's not really danger in that. And a lot of these farms we work with, we talk about buying directly with coffee farms. It sounds as simple as, like, oh, well, they go down, you know, Joe grows coffee with his son, they produce 3 bags, and then we buy it. But often these are much bigger operations. A lot of the farms we work with employ, how many people do you think San Sebastian employs?
100?
Yeah, at least. I mean, seasonally, the amount of pickers and whatever.
There's a small community, like, outside of the farm that is the pickers for San Sebastian.
Well, in San Geronimo, it's pretty similar. Like, yeah, that exactly. Little village there is pretty much driven by their cheese operation and their coffee. So, I mean, there's a lot sort of at stake, and you have to know the people who are running it, trust them ethically/morally. It'd be irresponsible to represent all coffee pickers as, like, struggling to get by, as I mentioned. Like, it's at times very lucrative for these individuals or these families to grow. And, like, that's okay. That's not bad. It's only bad when they're really doing it to the total exclusion and to the total exploitation of their employee base. So you should know their operation, and that's where direct trade is really important for us from an ethical standpoint, is we just want to be sure that they're not just producing great coffee and laying waste to the people who are doing the work. Plants was a thing talked about at symposium. It's like there's all these diseases going around. You know, there's questions about varieties. So what's it take to, like, grow coffee sustainably?
I sincerely believe that sustainable coffee growth is not produced by monocultures. And anyone who comes and asks me, which I've had a few coffee producers say, hey, I'm going to plant this new part of my farm. What variety should I grow? I'm learning how to grow coffee. I'm like, plant as many as you can get your hands on.
And learn.
And then do a mix of everything. Because it's not sustainable to have the monocultures. The monoculture, like geisha, can give you a short-term benefit. And if geisha's awesome for the next 20 years, you might be able to make bank for the next 20 years. But if that disease comes and wipes everything out, then you have to start all over again. So it's good to diversify your coffee farm. It's just like if you were investing, you'd want to diversify your investments. Mm-hmm. Being organic is not necessarily sustainable if you have coffee diseases that are not curable by organic means. It's often good for a coffee farm to not have as many plants as it can fit on its entire area.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually want to plant coffee plants further apart so they're more protected, they have more soil and nutrients, there's space in between. So if there was a disease, it would be harder for the disease to spread throughout the farm. And it's also important for a coffee farmer to be diversified in their coffee and in their crops, because if you have other ways of supporting the farm, say if you have macadamia trees or bananas
or a cheese factory
or avocados, except for the cheese factory, everything else will actually protect the coffee plant and secure the soil, so it actually makes growing the coffee easier. The cheese factory just makes going there a lot tastier.
Yeah, that was so good. Until I got sick, but that wasn't from the cheese. And then some farmers will even let certain fields rest for a year, which is kind of awesome, like to let something go wild, to let the land kind of chill, let nutrients be replaced. Otherwise, land does get exhausted. Like, you over-cultivate it, you push it too far, you're not putting enough back in. That takes a toll. So, all right, now we can move on to sort of business in the States, because this is where companies are kind of demonized, or
where sustainability seems like a sin versus sustainability as like a blessing to origin.
Yeah, it's because the public doesn't perceive business profitability as sustainability. Yeah. And the public being most people, like when they approach a coffee companies are not expected to be profitable. They're expected to be sustainable. And you see this a lot with you know, kind of the, is it a larger coffee culture, maybe not the industry so much, but it's not talked about enough in like the coffee industry. You get together at specialty coffee symposium, and they'll talk a little bit about marketing and what's hip and maybe where we should be investing, but they don't talk a lot about like how to run a profitable coffee business. So we're like really into sharing and talking about coffee and promoting sustainability until it comes to talking about like how does a coffee company actually make money, because that sounds bad. It's not bad. It's bad if it's abused, and that's like the only thing the coffee company is about, to the exploitation of, you know, the people they work with. But it's necessary in order to do good things. I could go on about this forever. You better talk some.
I think what's interesting about Symposium is that we had an opportunity to say like what was important to us as a coffee community. Like, what do we want to talk about? And no one wants to talk about making more money or how to be more sustainable as a business, quad business. I was thinking a lot about, like, whenever we talk about sustainability as a business, like, well, how are you giving back to your community? How are you, what's your recycling program? And those are all things that are conflated together with sustainability. They're tangent, they're applicable, but they're not the same thing.
Yeah, those are all good things. So if we at Stone Creek Coffee were just interested about sort of give backs and our engagement with our community, we'd be out of business. Like, so keep in mind, if you go back and listen to the last episode, History of Stone Creek Coffee, Eric mentions kind of in a side comment that he could look at the financial charts, the customer counts of Stone Creek, and you can see this 4% like year-over-year decline. And we're open to talk about that. Like, we as a company, we're struggling to sort of figure out how to run a business. And so if a big concern of ours, the biggest concern, was not making a sustainable business, we could very well be out of business right now. Thankfully, we've learned a lot. We've implemented a lot of changes in how we run the business, just like how we produce coffee. And the future is bright at Stone Creek, but it's only because we're really interested in making a profit that we have any ability to impact any farmers, to buy more coffee, to pay our employees more. Like, you can't just pay your employees more, you can't just pay more for your coffee without actually getting something in return, without actually being able to sell it in a way that makes it perpetually repeatable. So we want to be very clear that we are very socially minded, like, but we're also, like, we refuse to be the every other coffee company that just won't own up to what it is. Like, we want to be authentic with who we are, and we care very deeply about our farmers and their pickers, our employees, but we won't care to the neglect of being able to care in 10 years. So we won't care to the neglect of making sure we have money left over to reinvest in the business and make sure we're going to be around. Because a business doesn't just sustain. Like, we don't just have this year what we had last year. Like, we don't take that for granted. Because crap breaks. We have to put more money into the business just to keep it alive. So we have to make probably 5%. 5% of every dollar we earn needs to end up as profit, just so we can then put that into the business to take care of our building and our equipment and inflation. Because it, like, the world is out to get you as a business. So if you're not a step ahead of that, if you're not growing, then you will go out of business.
Reflecting on a couple of things that would, I think, make a business more sustainable, and they sound like business jargony things, but I like them.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's really not. A good sustainable coffee company will empower their employee base, give them more opportunities to be successful, and reward them for doing so. Sounds similar to what a producer would do if a picker picks better coffee. They will make more money. It's actually, a lot of producers will incentivize their pickers 25 cents per bag if they pick only ripe red cherries. Find things that increase your value, whether they're business investments, marketing things, things that change the way your customers perceive your value. Again, the same as a coffee producer would. If you're planting more geisha, that might be more appealing to a certain type of roaster. If you're fair trade organic, that might be more attractive to a different kind of roaster. Again, it's things that increase your value as a company.
The sustainability mindset needs to get baked into a lot of coffee companies, because I would say a lot of new coffee roasters are sort of banking like an all geisha producing coffee producer. So by that I mean that coffee companies are opening up with one particular customer in customer in mind, and that's the high-end specialty person who wants to wait 10 minutes for their pour over, and they'll drop $5 for it, which is awesome. Like, it's a lot of fun to play that game, but is that game going to be sustainable if there's another housing bubble, like if we relive 2008? It's like, how many coffee roasters are going to go out of business if we have like a legit depression? Because I mean, what we had in 2008, like, we made a big deal about it, like, it was terrible, but it wasn't anywhere near what it could be and what it would have been if the government hadn't bailed out the banks. Not to get too political, but that's a thing. So just keep that in mind. Like, every dollar we invest is a dollar we may not get back if we didn't invest it well.
And then I would say also keep in mind that a coffee roaster can't be sustainable in every single, I won't say can't, it would be super hard for a coffee roaster to be sustainable in every single aspect of a company. They're always going to focus on one or two things that they're really passionate about. And so every once in a while, I feel questions like, well, what's your recycling program? Or what are you doing through your coffee grounds? What are you doing with this and that and the other? And like, we care about making sure that our environment is clean. Like, we have a really good facility here for roasting to make sure the air coming out of our roasters is good. We have a decent recycling program. But our energy is going into building relationships at origin to find sustainable coffees that are great for you and great values for the customer. That's really where our energy is going for it. And If you jive with that as, like, hey, yeah, I really believe in that, then we're the roaster for you. If you're someone who's looking at this really complicated, like, composting program, we're probably not the right roaster.
And I mean that, if that's the most important thing.
Exactly.
Right.
And then we're talking about value judgments, not just sustainability.
Right. And people, I think, generally just want to know that you actually give a crap, because there's a lot of stigma. I mean, our generation, millennials, we want to know that a business is active in its community and that it isn't just out for itself. And so at Stone Creek, we're not just out for ourselves. Like I said, you know, our pay structure is very transparent, actually, at Stone Creek Coffee. So you can look at the pay ranges of the particular roles within the company, and you don't know what everybody makes, but you know very well what people don't make. You know that people aren't taking home, like I said, buku bucks. Somebody's not taking the bottom line and taking it home. Every dollar that's left at the end of the day for the company is getting, right now, reinvested back into the company to build it and to hopefully provide a better future for everybody involved, for the producers, the employees, and just the customers as well, as we stay in business, hopefully, another 23 years or so. So sustainability is really just a hard topic to kind of summarize, because there's so much nuance in a buzzword. Like, there's so much to talk about. We could talk for a long time about what practices at Origin actually promote sustainability. What practices in the United States actually help a company diversify its customer base and weather the storms of financial difficulties. Like, all those are worthwhile, but we could actually charge money to other coffee roasting companies to tell them everything we learned about how to run a profitable coffee business, because it's hard. Like, it is really hard to run a business well. And a lot of us get into coffee for, like, the art and the poetry and the relationships and the impact we can have at Origin, and we actually have no idea how to turn a profit at the end of the day, because, you know, your espresso machine might break, you might get audited, you might get hit with a tax you weren't expecting, the coffee market can go up, you might have a lawsuit. Like, all these things, as I mentioned, are just out to steal your viability, steal your sustainability, and you have to overcome them all. So good luck with that.
This is a really hard, and I've taught 3 or 4 classes on sustainability. I've felt the same way every single time I've taught it, because it's not like we're going to come here and talk about Rainforest Alliance and how good it is and fair trade. I feel like that's not truthful.
Sure.
It doesn't advance the conversation. Like, well, what does it really mean when I buy my pound of coffee? Where is that money going, and how is it being sustainable down the entire chain? It's way more complicated, and it is kind of haphazard, because you have to understand all the different facets.
So in the name of transparency, after it all, there are many things we can talk about, and I'm sure we'll shed more light on sort of the process of sustainability in the future, from things like certifications to processes at farms. You know, we'll be back at Origin later this year. Lots more to come on sort of this journey, but next time we're going to hopefully blow your mind a little bit and talk backwards from when you drop $15, $16, $18 on a pound of coffee. Where does that money go? Because you might hear, hey, roasted or green coffee costs $3 a pound or $2.50 or whatever. So the company is making $13, $13.50 on a pound of coffee. It's not that simple, and we'll talk about why that is. We'll really lay out what it takes to make a coffee company sustainable in terms of how it sells its coffee. Hopefully that's interesting. I think it's interesting.
I think it's interesting too.
So thanks for bearing with us through that. Hopefully you learned a little bit about sort of the challenges that a coffee company faces, or that a producer faces, when tackling this issue of sustainability. As I mentioned, it's popular. Like, people want to know their company is sustainable, but rarely will take the steps to see exactly how they are sustainable. And because it's popular, more and more companies are going to be throwing that sustainable label on things. Make sure you verify. Just be a discerning consumer. So there are more options out there for you in terms of the crap you can buy, so you might as well make sure that it's good crap and not just has a nice label with nice words on it. Go leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you think. Hopefully you are enjoying what we're laying down for you.
And if you have a question, feel free to shoot us a question at podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com. We take your questions seriously, and you may actually inspire a podcast episode.
We're geeks, jiving and grooving up and down your coffee scale.